ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 18, Text 48, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Tiraskrita Vipralabdha,
Tiraskrita Vipralabdha,
Shapta Kshipta Hata Api,
Shapta Kshipta Hata Api,
Nasya tat pratikurvanti,
Nasya tat pratikurvanti,
tad bhaktah prabhavopihi,
tad bhaktah prabhavopihi.
Translation: the devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even though they are defamed, cheated, cursed, disturbed, neglected, or even killed, they are never inclined to avenge themselves. It'll be pretty difficult to translate that without the book, isn't it? Purport: Rishi Shonaka also knew that the Lord does not forgive a person who has committed an offense at the feet of a devotee. By the way, this verse comes in relation to Parikshit Maharaj, who is cursed by Sringi. So, this is the context. The Lord can only give direction to take shelter of the devotee. Yeah, that means that if someone approaches the Supreme Lord to get to beg forgiveness for having offended his devotee, the Lord will direct him, you go to that devotee to ask for forgiveness, as in the very famous case of Durvasa Muni, who offended Ambarish Maharaj. He, referring here to Shonaka, thought within himself that if Maharaj Parikshit would counter-curse the boy, he might be saved. In other words, Parikshit Maharaj would be saved from the curse of the boy. But he, this time referring to Shonaka Rishi, but he knew also that a pure devotee is callous about worldly advantages or reverses. As such, the devotees are never inclined to counteract personal defamation, curses, negligence, etc. As far as such things are concerned, in personal affairs, the devotees do not care for them. But in the case of their being performed against the Lord and his devotees, then the devotees take very strong action. It was a personal affair, and therefore Shamika Rishi, sorry, I'm telling you, Shamika, not Shonaka, Shamika Rishi, knew that the king would not take counteraction. Thus there was no alternative than to place an appeal to the Lord for the immature boy. It is not that only the brahmanas are powerful enough to award curses or blessings upon the subordinate, upon the subordinates. The devotee of the Lord, even though he may not be a brahmana, is more powerful than a brahmana. But a powerful devotee never misuses the power for personal benefit. Whatever power the devotee may have is always utilized in service towards the Lord and his devotees only. The devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even though they are defamed, cheated, cursed, disturbed, neglected, or even killed, they're never inclined to avenge themselves. Okay, so who's a devotee? Any devotees here? Yeah, well, we like to see everyone as a devotee. Well, especially those who have taken up the practice of Krishna consciousness. We call them devotees. The term is used in Shastra and in Srila Prabhupada's writings in different ways in different contexts. Here, clearly, this refers to the topmost devotee of the Lord, because it's very difficult, or we find it very difficult to actually be on that platform. One has to be completely free of any sense of ahankar, false egoism, or thinking oneself very important. Generally, if someone attacks us, either physically or verbally or socially, that means we may be shunned by others. That's one of the types of bad dealings mentioned here, to be neglected. Devotee is not inclined to avenge or pratikara, to take some counteraction. He's not inclined. Not inclined to. Not only that he doesn't do so, but he's not inclined to. One may think, he said that, okay, I'm going to say, no, I shouldn't do it. Remember this verse from Bhagavatam? Okay, all right, I won't do it. But the devotee on the level of Parikshit Maharaj is not even, that he doesn't even get that far of thinking that, well, I feel like doing it, but I won't do it. He's so much wrapped in love of Krishna that, well, there are different considerations. One consideration is so much wrapped in love of Krishna, he doesn't take very seriously what's going on in the world. He can also, one who's a great pure devotee of Krishna may not even notice that someone's neglecting him, because he's just thinking of Krishna so intensely that he doesn't know what's going on. He's oblivious to what's going on in the world. Or that this brings to mind the Trinadapi Suni Chena Tarori Vasa Hishnuna, this injunction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the humility and tolerance, they go together. If one thinks that if one actually considers oneself lower than straw in the street, then he won't retaliate if people attack him in various ways, because he thinks, who am I to retaliate? Or another way of looking at it is that, well, this person's kicking me, I don't know exactly why this person's doing it, or this person is insulting me, I don't know exactly why they're doing it, but the reason must be that I must have done something to deserve it. And actually, Krishna is arranging this to teach, to give a little punishment. Actually, I deserve much more, but Krishna's just arranged, this person is being very kind to me and giving me the punishment that I deserve for my sinful activities. That's a very different way of seeing things that most people have. So, one reason we become upset if people insult us, because there's this sense of personal prestige. I'm very important and others should see that I'm important, or at least I should be considered normal, acceptable. I shouldn't be rejected from human society. We all have this strong tendency to want to fit in with others. We don't like to be the outcast or someone who's not considered part of the group. Srila Prabhupada often gave the example, Sangat Sanjayate Kamaha, one's desires developed by one's association. If one associates with drunkards, one will want to become a drunkard. You know, people are all drinking and you're going around with them and say, hey, what's wrong with him? Come on, take a drink. And you'll think, oh, what's wrong with me? I don't want to be the left out and thought that I'm strange. And then you also start drinking. If you associate with thieves, then you'll also become a thief. In fact, they won't allow you to associate with them unless you become a thief, because you're a security liability otherwise. As also, I remember many years ago in Bangladesh, there was one of our devotees was a policeman. He said, it's very difficult not to take bribes, because if you don't take all the other police, they become very upset that this person, he's going to put us in trouble. One thing, people are going to expect work without bribes, and another thing, that he may complain or something to some other officer who's not corrupt, if you can find them. So the pressure is there. So the same thing Srila Prabhupada said, if one associates with devotees, then it won't be a devotee. Come on, where's your tilak? You have to get up in the morning. So if we associate, as Srila Prabhupada once said, when someone asked him, how can he become advanced? Prabhupada said, you come and live with us. The devotee, or the person with us, he said, I find it difficult to get up in the morning. Prabhupada said, come and live with us. We'll make it difficult for you not to get up in the morning. That was the implication. It brings to mind various remembrances of in the early days when I joined the movement, of devotees being so merciful. One of the now sannyasi and guru in our movement throwing someone down the stairs because he doesn't want to get up. And in another case, when he tries to drag him out of his sleeping, another one tries to drag him out of his sleeping bag. And then the devotee inside is holding on to his sleeping bag. So the guru, now he's a guru, dragging him all the way along the hall and into the shower stall and throwing him in the shower stall in his sleeping bag. So the devotees are so merciful. They won't let you get away with not getting up in the morning. Nowadays we're more reasonable and less merciful. But anyway, the point is that devotees, they don't care for personal prestige. They only care for Krishna. They only want to serve Krishna. And they care for the devotees of Krishna, as Srila Prabhupada points out in this purport. On his own personal account, a devotee doesn't mind. He doesn't mind means he doesn't even think there's anything wrong with it. If someone neglects him, beats him, insults him, or even kills him, which is actually what was happening here. Parikshit Maharaj had a death sentence. 7 days, after 7 days, the date was fixed after 7 days, and the method of execution was already prescribed. So Parikshit Maharaj, he accepted that because he only cares for Krishna. Jivane morane gati anahima. Radha Krishna pranamod jugala kisho. Jivane morane gati anahima. Nilotan Das sings. Radha and Krishna, the lotus feet of these two, the youthful couple, they are my life in life or in death. In other words, death won't stop that attachment to them. So people, we see they're so much attached to prestige that they'll give their life for it. For instance, if they are in a very prestigious position and then they fall from that position, they may commit suicide because sambhavitasya chakirti marana dati richate, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, defamation is worse than death. But a devotee doesn't give up his life because of prestige issue. A devotee gives his life to Krishna. That's called ekanishtata. This term appears in the in Srimad Bhagavatam, ekanishta, one who is his devotion, his attraction, he's firmly fixed on one point only, that's Krishna. And that term is also used in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings and in Bengali Vaishnav culture, at least as I knew it in the 1970s and 1980s in Bangladesh. It was a term that we'd often use. For pure devotion, we'd often use the term ekanishta bhakti. Bhakti that is only centered on Krishna, very firmly centered on Krishna. We have terms like this in Bhagavad Gita also. Ananyas chintayantamam, ananya cheta satatam, satatam kirtayantamam. So these are all ideas of ekanishtata. Fully fixed on Krishna, and really doesn't care what others think about his devotion to Krishna. It's not that because people become disturbed, and therefore, I don't want to be left out. I want everyone to like me, so I won't be Krishna conscious. But he doesn't care, and that is the standard of pure devotion which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cited, having heard it from his own guru, as being the standard of pure devotion. And the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, evam vrata sapriyanama kirtya jata anurago chitta drutta uchai hasatyato roditi roti gayatyun madhavan rityati lokabhaya. The pure devotee is described whose feelings and attachment for Krishna have completely taken over his heart and softened his heart. He likes to chant the name of the Lord, who is very dear to him, and in so doing he may laugh, cry, sing, dance, and he doesn't care what outside people think. This is pure devotion. Not to be imitated, but it is the standard of imitation means tadasya saram hridayam bhateta. That's also described. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes it. One's heart is steel framed. If upon chanting the holy names his heart doesn't melt. So a devotee doesn't care for outsiders to say, he doesn't try to satisfy everyone. You can't satisfy everyone, however much we may try. In the words of one American president, as he's quoted as having said, I can't remember which president it was, that you can satisfy all the people some of the time, some of the people all of the time, but you can't satisfy all of the people all of the time. But actually you can't satisfy all of the people. Maybe within a small group, if you say this, my own family members. Maybe the smaller the group, the easier it is to satisfy them. But just like to satisfy the people of America, you may dissatisfy the people of Russia, or vice versa. Thinking this, ayam nija paro veti garana laghu chetasam, thinking in terms of these are mine, these are my people, these are some other group. That's small-mindedness. So one can satisfy others if one satisfies Krishna. Although the people of this world, they won't be satisfied with that. They don't like Krishna consciousness, so that's why they or we are here. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur quoted, or maybe he made it up himself, some Sanskrit saying, Antashakta Bahi Shaiva Sabhayam Vaishnavo Mataha. Someone who tries to satisfy everyone. When he's inside his heart, he's actually a materialist. He doesn't really care for Krishna. But outside, he shows himself to be very religious. And when he's with devotees, he's like a devotee. When he's among devotees, he speaks like a devotee. When he's among Mayavadis, he speaks like a Mayavadi. When he's among materialists who are interested in, for instance, mundane welfare work, then he talks the language of mundane welfare work. But one who is a pure devotee doesn't try to satisfy everyone. He only tries to satisfy Krishna. One can't satisfy everyone, as Arjuna found out. Arjuna had the idea, well, let's be nice to everyone. Let's not fight. But Krishna wasn't satisfied. And definitely Bhima wouldn't have been satisfied with his idea. And actually, the people he was most concerned about killing is Bhishma and Drona. They wouldn't have been satisfied. They'd much rather be killed by Arjuna than Arjuna walk away and not kill them. because is a big topic, but the point is here that Arjuna, he had the idea, let's be nice to everyone. But even if you think, let's be nice to everyone, someone will come along and not be nice, or be not nice. As I often gave the example, if the government of India was to take Mahatma Gandhi's idea of ahimsa literally, then within as much time as it would take the Pakistanis to recover from their shock and mobilize their army, then the capital of India would either shift to Islamabad, or the capital of Pakistan would shift to Delhi, and again there'd be the Mughal Raj. In other words, if the government of India was to say, okay, no fighting, we're not going to fight, even if Pakistan attacks us, we're not going to fight, then Pakistan will attack. So it's better to be prepared for that. You can't satisfy everyone. So we should try to satisfy Krishna. Yasmin tushte jagat tushta. If he's satisfied, then there's a possibility of everyone being satisfied. We should all get in line with Krishna. That example Srila Prabhupada also gave of concentric circles. I don't need a light. You need a light? If someone needs a light on, they can. Oh, for the shooting? Okay. Yeah. Okay, turn it on. What was I saying? That concentric circles, yeah. If we throw a stone into a pool of water, concentric circles of waves will be seen. If we throw another stone in, then concentric circles will start to go off from that stone and will clash. And so we'll get non-concentricity. Unless we throw the second stone in exactly the same point as we threw the first stone. And we can throw any number of stones if we throw them in the same point, and we'll get concentricity, and actually the waves will increase in force. So the point here is that if we all put our faith, ekanishtata, in one place, then there is harmony. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's magazine in English was called The Harmonist, and it attacked everything in the world that doesn't seem like harmonizing. But the point of that everyone has to get in line with Krishna, then there can be harmony. Other attempts at harmony will simply result in some gooey, what's Tamil for gooey? I don't know. I don't know many Tamil words. Gooey means sickly sweet, falsely sweet. Sweet. Sweet, yeah, yeah. You may don't have any terms in Tamil for this, but sweet to the point of being nauseous, that it's so sweet, it's too sweet, and with some sweet, but with some unpleasant other flavor which is unpleasant also. So no, not tikka, not bitter, but some other, I don't know. It's just, see, language is very much linked with culture. Hare Krishna. Anyway, this false niceness, or niceness, we're trying to be nice, but there's no real depth or substance. There's no real basis for it except our desire to be accepted by others. That's what's at the basis of it. We're nice because we want others to think that we are nice. And we want to show ourselves as helping others and being empathetic to others, to use that fashionable term. But actually we just want to be known as a nice person. If we can get away with stabbing someone, we will do. So a devotee doesn't prostitute himself to become popular. This is the activity of a prostitute, to make herself attractive to everyone so she can get her own benefit in the form of customers. But it's very low class. But devotee is 100% for Krishna. He doesn't care what others think of him. To the extent that Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung, that he will consider that he is receiving the ultimate mercy of his guru when Bishoyi Amare Pagala Balaya Angate Dibeko Dhuli. When materialistic people insult me, calling me mad and throw dirt on me. Dirt and dust. Ah, yes. This is very good. Not only is he not concerned with being rejected by materialists, but he thinks if they reject me, that's very good, because we don't partake of their values whatsoever. To be considered mad by a madman is good. Multiplying two negative integers, you get a positive integer. So if you're called bad by the bad, then you should be good. So what is this? Our aspiration is to be considered mad, and materialistic people will throw all dirt on us. That means we become rejected, but not rejected by Krishna. If someone has all dirt and dust on them, then That's not prestigious, is it? One should, to be prestigious, one should be very clean and smart. Of course, a sadhu's prestige may increase if he's according to his renunciation. That's one of the six main attributes by which someone is known to be Bhagavan. So one of them is renunciation. The Digambar Jain sadhus, there's still some of them. They walk around completely naked. It shows their complete renunciation. They're not insulted for that. People tend to respect that. This Shankaracharya of Kanchi, especially the previous one, not so much the present one, was highly respected. He would dress in just small cloth and around his waist, and then another one, the top piece, and that was all. But he had his own dignity. The dignity of a sadhu does not depend upon his worldly possessions, but on his detachment from them. So for a kshatriya to be poor is undignified, but for a brahmana, that is a sign of his dignity, that he's not dependent on others, he's only dependent on Krishna. Srila Prabhupada gave the example that in Krishnanagar there was a king, and he heard about some sadhu, some brahmana, who had his little schools in typical traditional brahmana school, means he'll have a little hut and he'll live in, and the boys will come and he'll teach them. He doesn't take any money. So the king came to see him. He'd heard he's very renounced, and very pure sadhu, brahmana, married. Married can be sadhu also. And so he was living with nothing, and just often people they would just make put some straw, some little mud, and that's it. And the king, he's used to living in great opulence, and he thought that the Brahman is living a very miserable life. He says, "Well, is there anything I can do for you?" He said, "No. Well, how are you living like this? You don't have any money." "Yeah, well, the boys, they go out every morning and they collect some rice. Bhavati Bhiksham Dehi. And we get some leaves here and there in Bengal. Different kinds of leaves grow here and there, and the local people up to the present day know what they are, how to cook them and everything. And we're living like that." There's the story of one of the Greeks. Who was that? One of the Greek philosophers. The king came to see him. He was just doing some mathematical calculation or something like that. King came to see him, hearing that he's very renounced. "Can I do something for you?" "Yeah, please get out of the light. Don't." He's blocking the light while he's doing some writing. So, that's the dignity of the dignity of a brahmana is that he's not dependent on anything. He's independent. Only depends on Krishna. And even if others consider him a fool, he doesn't, for the sake of being considered dignified by fools, he doesn't also become a fool. He doesn't get involved in the pounds, shillings and pence, or rupees and paisa. Paisa, any of you know? Anyone heard that word? Paisa? 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 You know that word? You've heard it? Okay. Maybe in the next generation they won't even know the word. Just like when I was young, 5-6 years old, I used to hear the word farthing, but I think now that children growing up, they won't know what a farthing is, because there used to be 1 pound, 12 shillings, then in each shilling there's, how many pence? I can't even remember. Pence is penny, plural of penny. I can't remember how many there are in a shilling. And then half a penny is a halfpenny, and a quarter of a penny is called a farthing. But with inflation, the farthing was out of currency. So paisa. We're not interested in rupees and paisa. Nowadays, if you're going to talk about anything seriously, you have to talk about crores of rupees. When I came to India, a lakh was a big thing. Nowadays, if you're going to do anything, it's a crore. A lakh is just something to, probably just to bribe a peon or something like that. It's getting like that. It's becoming like that. The beggars, if you give them 5 rupees, they won't accept it. At least in Bombay. I don't know about in Chennai. In Vellore, I think you won't get too many beggars. They won't come to a smaller town like this. What's that? They don't come to the smaller towns. They go to holy places and to melas and to bigger towns. I remember when I came to Bombay, I think it must have been the first time. Yeah, that was 1977. I came from Calcutta, I saw the beggars had these rubbish chappals or shoes or slippers. I was used to Calcutta, where so many people who are working, they don't have any shoes. But even the beggars here have shoes. So, well-to-do, well-heeled, as they say. So a devotee doesn't partake in this kind of well-heeled prestige. Well-heeled is an English saying, which means someone who's got plenty of money, which means well-heeled, a heel on the shoe. If you have good shoes, expensive shoes, then you're called well-heeled, which is a way of saying that you have more money than you need, to just more than just the basic necessities of life. You're doing well in terms of what materialistic people consider to be doing well, which means to have plenty of money. But a devotee, he maintains his dignity by not being on that platform, by remaining aloof from such people and from the values of such people. A devotee maintains his integrity. His integrity means the integral factor, that which makes his existence, is his dedication to Krishna. So he's not going to compromise that by dressing nicely or acting in a way that the materialistic people will be pleased with him. He's only concerned about Krishna. A non-devotee thinks that he has to, if he has many, someone has many possessions, they're very dignified and prestigious. Vitam ov eva kaloni nam janmachara gunodayaha. In the Bhagavatam, it states that especially in Kali Yuga, one who has got money is considered aristocratic, a gentleman. Srila Prabhupada often pointed that out. A person in his own personal life may be addicted to all abominable activities, but if he has a suit and tie, he's considered a gentleman. So our definition is different. A devotee thinks someone is very dignified if he's detached from everything in the world. He's not the slave of public opinion. He's not the slave of possessions. He's the slave of Krishna. Therefore, he's called akinchana, one who has nothing but Krishna. So a devotee is slave of Krishna. I saw someone in North India, his name given by his parents or whoever, family guru or whatever, Ram Gulam, slave of Ram. We have that word das, which means servant, sometimes used for slave also, but actually, the concept of slavery isn't there in the Sanskrit language. So gulam, which is a word coming from the Arabic culture, they have the concept of slavery. So the idea of a slave means that, that's there in the Bhagavatam also, the description of an animal that is tied up and is completely dependent on the master. And just if the master, Bhaktivinoda Thakur also sung that song that Vaishnava Thakur, Tomara Koko, Baleho Jana Hamore, may I be known as your slave, a dog, sorry, maybe I. The Vaishnava, he wants to be the dog of the Vaishnava. That he'll be tied up outside the house and he won't allow any pratipajan, any inimical person to come. Whatever scraps of food you give, I'll accept that. Actually, he's singing it to Krishna, but Prabhupada always called it as Vaishnava Thakur. Just last night I was reading the description of life in old India, that in the village or small town, people would have their cows and buffaloes and the cowman, the gwala, we'd say in Hindi, would take all the cows of all the different people out to grazing in the forest. And in the evening, he'd bring them back and they'd walk through the street and the cow, they know which house they belong to. They know them, so they'd walk into their own house, leaving the herd, and they'd walk into their own room, their own place, and they'd go. They know their place. And then in the morning, the cowherd man would come probably playing his flute if he was following Krishna's example, and all the cows would come out like that. So he knows, the cow knows, this is where I belong. This is my owner's house. So devotee knows, this is where I belong. I belong at the lotus feet of Krishna. and the devotee doesn't care what others think of him. Now, you may have been surprised when I said that, well, a devotee doesn't dress nicely because he doesn't care what other people think of him. But then we see that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made a point to dress very nicely. He had been living with Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, living a life as completely renounced as Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. We don't have descriptions of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur going completely naked as Gaur Kishore sometimes would, not to make a show of it, but when you're so much absorbed in feelings for Krishna, then you may not even know whether you're naked or not. But anyway, he was living a totally renounced life. Well, there was some difference because he was overseeing the affairs at the Jogapith, so he was involved in management. At that time, management was very little, very troublesome, no doubt, but not much troublesome because it's very difficult to get anyone to stay there. You pay pujaris and they wouldn't stay even being paid. Because it was just a temple in the fields and there was nothing to do except worship the Lord. And there were no facilities. To get there you had to walk through the rice fields. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is very renounced, clearly in his behavior, his activities, everything. But then he, after, especially after founding the Gauriya Math in Calcutta, then he started to dress nicely in with a long Western-style coat in the winter and go in motor cars and all this. So why was he doing that if he doesn't care for his own prestige? He doesn't care for his own prestige, but he cares for the preaching Krishna consciousness, in which people will have to begin to accept him on some level. As Srila Prabhupada was questioned, by why is he building a big temple in Vrindavan when the six Goswamis, they slept under a different tree every night? And he's supposed to be a follower of the six Goswamis. And Srila Prabhupada said, well, if I slept under a different tree every night, then no one would come to listen to me. But if I have a big temple, well, people will think, Bhaktivedanta Swami is very important. Let's go and see what he has to say. Because people measure importance by external achievements. Although it may be in the case of some sadhus that they just get discovered by the public, although they don't have any possessions. And then someone comes and builds, they're living a renounced life, and then someone comes and builds a big ashram all around them. So it's difficult to be a sadhu, even if you want to be, unless you go way up in the Himalayas. And then probably nowadays they'll send a drone to find out some sadhu who we can get some blessings from. Go and find one. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wanted to preach Krishna consciousness, and also he wanted to uphold the dignity of Vishnu and the Vaishnavas. At that time, the Vaishnavas were considered the most low-class people, and those who were going by the names of Vaishnavas, they probably were, by their behavior. They were, in the name of being Vaishnavas, in the name of following Radha and Krishna, they would imitate their pastimes. And there was a whole new jati that had come out of that, or subcaste of, called the Boshtam, the offspring of Babaji's and widows. So they became known as the Boshtam, or upper brunsha. What's the word in English for that? That's the corruption of the word Vaishnava. Linguistic corruption. The Vaishnavas were considered very low class. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to show that they're the most high class. So he wanted to preach to the people of the world that the position of a Vaishnava is most high class. Gaurakishore Das Babaji, illiterate, misbehaved. If anyone came to see him, they may be a very polite, very respectful, very dignified person. He would generally insult them. We can presume that he spoke in a pretty rough way, as he was from East Bengal, and even in the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and even up to the present day, people, in the estimation of people from West Bengal, people from East Bengal speak with a rough and rustic manner, and their manner of speaking, their various sub-dialects are quite unusual and pretty coarse and low class according to the standard of Shantipuri Bengali, or the Bengali that's spoken by the Kolkata Bhadra Lok. So Gaurakishore, he appeared to be a very low class person. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to uphold that this is the real standard of a Vaishnava. When he was lecturing in Navadvip one time, he spoke about Kanishtha Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, and he said, and for Uttam Adhikari, having spoken at length, he would usually speak not less than 2 hours at a time. That was a very short lecture for him. Having spoken at length about the characteristics of a Kanishtha Adhikari and of a Madhyam Adhikari, and he said, well, there's no need to talk about Uttam Adhikari because Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj is living here in Navadvip. You can just go and see him, and then you'll understand what an Uttam Adhikari is. To show the dignity of a Vaishnava, this is actually the only dignified position, to be a slave of Krishna. Otherwise, one is a slave of one's senses. One is a slave of Maya. One is a slave of public opinion. This was a criticism of the Gaudiya Math and of Vaishnavism in general at that time, that it breeds a slave mentality. The idea that we are the servant. No, why should we? Vivekananda had come out saying we should be strong and show we're strong. And this slave mentality, and the Gaudiya Math was subservient to the British Raj, whereas the most people in Bengal, especially the intellectuals, they were against the British. They wanted to throw them out. And here's the Gaudiya Math cooperating with them. They've adopted us because they have this slave mentality that we should submit to Krishna. So they think, well, we should submit to the British also. This is undignified. To be a slave is undignified. One should be independent. This was the criticism of the Gaudiya Math. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave a lecture stating that the Gaudiya Math stands for the dignity of the human race. That to be a slave of Krishna is dignified. To try to be dignified in any other way is simply foolishness. The great king who's sitting on his throne with jewels and crowns and everyone is offer obeisance to him, then his body will be burned or eaten by worms. That body, what is that body? It's subject to death just like everyone else's body. So we offer respect to the king, or in this case the British, as social matter, because we're operating within the world, then taking the position of brahmanas, then brahmanas, they should support the rulers, unless the rulers are extremely corrupt. Now, it may be said that the British were extremely corrupt, but actually it appears that after the British left, the levels of corruption in India increased tremendously. And even you may say, well, they were killing cows, but not, there was actually much less cow killing in India under the British. They were afraid. They didn't want to promote it because they wanted to keep the peace. But it would have never been accepted if the Indian Hindu leaders hadn't promoted it. the Muslims had promoted it, there would have been an outcry. But there's the Hindus, traitors to their own. What's better, to be a slave or to be a traitor? So anyway, we're verging on the political here. But the point is that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur wanted to point out that the Gauriya Mat, not only is our position dignified, but we want to give dignity to the whole human race. To be a human and think I'm dignified when one is attached to Ahara Nidra Bhai Maitun, eating, sleeping, mating and defending just like an animal, that's not a dignified position. Real dignity is to accept our position as a servant of Krishna. By stating that the Gauriya Mat stands for the dignity of the human race, he was indirectly stating that the whole human race is undignified, and that's a fact. There's no, for all we're concerned with our dignity, there is no dignity in being in ignorance and going through our life trying to show that we're something very special and very great, and then just dying and becoming a hog or a dog. His dignity, so he showed, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur showed some dignity by, as to be accepted by the common people, that he wore, actually when he was on preaching engagements like this, he would wear some, he might wear it again in the winter, some long coat, British style coat. But when he was just lecturing in the mart among his devotees, he would also dress very simply, similar to what I was saying about the Kanchi Shankara, Shankaracharya, this Chandrasekhar Indra Saraswati. It's quite similar actually. The cloth covering the waist, somewhat longer than the Mayavadis have, and an outer cloth. Just very, very simple. So the point is that for his own sake, he didn't accept any finery, but so that materialistic people would think, oh, looks quite smart, for their judgment. Not that he was pandering to them exactly, but just to get their attention, to hear his important message. But his real sense of, sometimes we're asked about this, about humility, or humility, egoism, and self-confidence, swabhiman, and what is the difference between swabhiman and the ahankara? Swabhiman is the, that's the word which has been coined to match the English term self-esteem. How does that fit with ahankar, false egoism? Well, clearly, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, and of course, our own Srila Prabhupada, they were free from ahankar, or false egoism, but they had self-esteem, and self-confidence. They certainly had self-confidence. Because they were, not that they're thinking, I am very great, but they're thinking, I am a servant of the very great, and I'm deputed to do some important service, so I have to do that. And others should take note, others should listen, others should cooperate for their benefit. So that it's not that someone's thinking, well, I have to have self-esteem, but that comes automatically by identifying oneself as a servant of the Paramahamsa Vaishnava. If one has to preach, then he has to be confident that what he's doing is correct and authorized and for the benefit of others. And that faith comes from faith in one's own guru and in the Shastra and in all the previous acharyas and in Bhagavan himself. So a devotee is, that's his internal dignity. He's not a petty person. We'll find that someone, they're so concerned about being dignified that, oh, what will others think of me? Petty consciousness. Laghu chetasa. Very petty. What will I, devotee doesn't think like that. What does it matter what I? What does it matter what others think of it? Let them say what they like. But if that would affect the preaching, that people think badly of devotees, devotees concerned with that. So he doesn't deliberately cultivate public rejection. On the other hand, although devotees concerned with how the public perceive devotees, he doesn't. He's not a slave of that. He has his own position. Let others accept it or not accept it. We'll present it to others in a manner, we'll try to make it palatable to them. Not that we're going to change the message, which is inherently not very palatable to them in their diseased consciousness. But we're not going to compromise our message or change our message or try to be like them in a manner that they might like us. We have our own position. We have to maintain that. And not come down to the petty level of non-devotees who think that, well, if you're good, you have to feed the poor and so on. They have their own definition of being good. And we have the definition. We have to satisfy Krishna by all means. So devotee, he has actually nothing to do with this world. Therefore, he doesn't mind if anyone insults him. He might actually think, well, that's good. If such a person insults me, that's good. Some time ago, I met with a couple of my godbrothers, sannyasis, and one of them mentioned that I was the subject of much criticism, and I said, well, if a sannyasi is not the subject of much criticism, he's probably not doing his job properly. He should be pointing out all the things that others shouldn't be doing, and they may not like that. He should be a servant of the truth, not a servant of public opinion. So, this is the position of a devotee. We see that materialistic people, they're very concerned about prestige. One syndrome or phenomenon that we repeatedly come into contact with is that when a young man wants to join our movement, especially if they're from a so-called good background. Good means they have more money than other people. That makes you good, according to the materialistic outlook. And their son wants to become a full-time in the ashram, and the parents get very upset. Not in all cases, only 99%. And they think, oh, we love you so much. But one reason they're very concerned is that their neighbors and friends will think, oh, their son went away because he wasn't happy at home. There must be something wrong at home. Didn't look after him properly. Didn't raise him properly. So they're concerned. What will others think? They're very concerned about that. And they're also concerned that I invested so much money in this child, paid for him to go to the best schools, paid for him to go to the best college, and I was expecting a good return, that he would get a good job and give me plenty of money. In fact, recently one young man in this state joined our ashram, and his mother openly said, we want you to work and make money. Come on, we're expecting you to give us some money. So most of them are not so gross like that. There was another one from this state some years ago who the mother, the boy had gone away to join an ashram in a city in another part of India, and she became terribly sick. Maybe they'll put it in the medical books then, in that one cause of sickness, that the son becomes a brahmachari. It's the... In many cases, the mother becomes sick, and the only cure is if the son will come home. So she was saying that, yes, you can practice Krishna consciousness at home. I just need to see you every day. And the pressure became so much that for whatever reason they succumbed, and the boy went back home and he did a job. And after a short time, his company transferred him to another city with much more pay. And amazingly, the mother didn't feel sick not seeing him. In fact, she was very pleased. There's more money coming in, and we don't have to pay to feed him directly. So, this motherly love, based on prestige and personal... Of course, not in every case. Again, only in 99% of the cases. But this materialistic love, what is it based on? It's based on mundane principles. So if one actually loves the son, he should be very happy to see him going out and giving his life to Krishna and delivering us and all our forefathers from birth and death. But people think, oh, what will others think of me? They're so concerned about prestige. I know there was another case, someone said that, well, if my son joins, then I don't mind if he joins, but he should have a good position, like temple president or something like that. There was someone else, his father was unhappy that he joined, but then he got sent overseas. He thought, okay, all right, that's good. So I can tell everyone that, yes, my son's overseas. So he got a good posting. This nonsense. There are so many cases like this. The Keshav Bharati Maharaj, he recalled that his father was completely against him joining the Hare Krishna movement. But then after quite a few years, he went to visit his parents, and his father had come to know that he had a big position in the movement. So he was, okay, very good. All right. At that time, he was in charge of a movement in Spain and Portugal, which at that time meant something. Nowadays, it means just a handful of devotees trying to hold things together. There was also another devotee who told me he was in charge. No, he didn't tell me. He told Prabhupada, and I read it, that his father had been against him joining the movement, but when he came to visit him in Los Angeles, at that time that devotee was in charge of the BBT, which was a massive operation, printing literally millions of books and magazines. So his father was very impressed that he came into his son's office and saw that his son's office is bigger than his, and his son is actually running a business much bigger than the father's business. So, and he thought, oh, okay, Hare Krishna is okay. All based on prestige, that's all. Prabhupada knew that materialistic people are like that. Therefore, he pushed his disciples in America, his American disciples who came to India, he pushed them, build these temples in Vrindavan, Mayapur and Bombay. For the sake of prestige. Because people won't take us seriously unless we have some big temples. So prestige, that is a materialistic consideration. A devotee for himself doesn't consider that. But for Krishna's service, he does. Otherwise, for himself, what does he care? What does he care? There we find that some devotees, just like Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, wanted to, he took the blessings of all the devotees before he wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita. Gopal Bhatta Goswami said, "Yeah, you can write it, but don't write anything about me. That's all." He didn't want that he should be advertised. So just in passing, his name is given. That Sri Rup Sanatan Bhatta Raghunath Sri Jeev Gopala Bhatta Das Raghunath. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami writes, "These are the names of my gurus," but he doesn't elaborate on him. So this is the attitude of a devotee. He doesn't care what others think of him. That is the standard to be emulated. But why is that? Because he cares completely for Krishna and the service of Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any question about that, please? Yes, please. Yeah. Who are different levels? That what are you referring to? That Krishneti Yasagiritam Manasadreta, that verse? In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Yeah. In Bhagavatam, yeah, sometimes there's this discussion about this. In the Bhagavatam there's a discussion of Bhagavatas. Beginning with Acharya Mevaharya Sabhakta Prakrita Smitaha. And then there's Uttam Bhagavat is the that Sarvabhuteshu Yapashyat Esha Bhagavato Uttama Uttama Bhagavat. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, following Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the term is used of Adhikari. Shraddha Vanjan Hoy Bhakti Adhikari Kanishta Madhyam Uttam Shraddha Anushari. So it's a different classification. In the Bhagavatam, there's the classification of devotees into three levels is on how they perceive others and interact with them. The neophyte devotee perceives the Supreme Lord and me. It's me and Krishna, and to hell with anyone else. He doesn't care about anyone else. For the Madhyam Bhakta sees there's the Supreme Lord. He loves him. The devotees makes friendship with the innocent people. He's merciful to them. And the envious people, he avoids them. And the topmost devotees sees that all living beings are engaged in devotional service. Whereas the Kanishtam, Madhyam, Uttam in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as he described it, it depends on their level of faith. So there are different classifications, different ways of analyzing the same thing. Someone blasphemed the effects of preaching. The effects of preaching. Hex? Oh, you preach to someone and they change their life and then you become cursed. Well, Narad Muni is a good example of that. He was cursed by Daksha for saving Daksha's sons from materialistic life and sending them back to Godhead. Daksha was a Prajapati. That was his job, to beget sons who would populate the universe. But Narad Muni, he just preached to them and they all went back to Godhead instead. And they didn't get married. So he was... A devotee who's actually preaching can expect to be cursed by others. And if we're actually preaching, then we're going to change people's lives. And others are not going to like that. Must be. It must be there. So we have to be prepared to accept that. And we can expect also that neophyte devotees who want to worship Krishna and live a comfortable life, they will protest. Also, if someone changes someone's life or they become fully dedicated to Krishna, they say, well, you can preach without doing that. They may do also. They may bring many people to devotional service, but not at the standard of... They'll bring them into neophyte level of devotional service, where they remain materialistic. If anyone actually surrenders to Krishna, then the envious, they will become upset. So we can measure our preaching success to some extent by how much people become upset. That doesn't mean we should go around trying to make others upset deliberately, but it will happen as a byproduct of what, as a consequence. Not, we should take care not to unnecessarily upset others, but at the same time, if we are to speak the truth, and that's what we're supposed to do, then there will be plenty who won't like that. That's a fact. So we can expect, what's the wording here? We can expect to be defamed, cheated, cursed, disturbed, neglected, or even killed if we're actually going to preach Krishna consciousness. It's discussed in that book on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service. This topic is discussed. Anything else? Yeah.
I know that nowadays movement is going like devotee is just trying to hold the things out there.
I don't understand what you mean. What you mean? You have to be more clear. Oh, in Spain, I said, it was a prestigious position to be a leader there when there were hundreds of devotees. Now they're just in Spain trying to hold a few centers together. Yeah. The name will spread all over the world. Seems contradictory. Well, go to Spain and do something about it. Yeah? Well, Srila Prabhupada said that if we don't do it, someone else will do it. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement will spread, but maybe we took that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said the movement, his name will spread all over the world. Maybe we thought that, okay, well, that's good. So let's lie back and drink a Pepsi Cola, and anyway, the movement's going to spread. The holy name's going to spread all over the world. So why do we have to bother doing anything? We have to surrender, and then the mercy will flow through. If we don't surrender, then the mercy becomes stopped up, and then someone has to come again and open it up. Srila Prabhupada wrote about that in his, what is that? What's that? Viraha Ashtashtakam. He said that Nityananda Prabhu brought the channel of love of God, but then the caste Goswamis blocked it up. And then he said, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he again opened it up, and again it's become closed. So Srila Prabhupada brought the flow of love of God. Anyway, I don't want to talk too much about this now. Hare Krishna. I'll talk about it some other time, because it's a big topic. It's the end of the lecture. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Sri Gaura Nitai ki jai.